Welcome back to Healing the Earth Airwaves. I have with me a man named Dylan. Dylan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, awesome. So, I briefly introduced the topic of our talk about an hour ago, but for listeners who are just tuning in, maybe let's just begin to start talking. I'd like you to introduce yourself, I guess, and maybe tell us a little bit about who you are and who this guy, Jeffrey Free Lures, is.
Sure. My name is Dylan, and I'm one of Jeffrey Lures' supporters, and I work on his defense campaign as well as his website. And I'm a friend of Jeff's, and I've known him for probably the last 5-6 years, and I lived in Eugene, Oregon at the time of his arrest, so I've been pretty much involved in his support since then in some way or another.
And I think, like, a lot of people tuning in right now, I think, have an idea of who Jeff is. And so I guess, like, basic things about him.
Sure.
5 years ago, do you want to tell a story a little bit?
Yeah, of course. Well, basically, Jeff is a 26-year-old American political prisoner. He's currently imprisoned in Oregon State Penitentiary in Oregon State, which is just about an hour and a half north of Eugene, Oregon. He was arrested with his co-defendant, Craig Marshall, 5 years ago this summer. It was actually June 15th, 2000, shortly after burning 3 SUVs at a local car dealership named Romania Chevrolet. And he was arrested shortly after that and essentially held on 13 charges. He sat for essentially a year awaiting trial on $1 million bail and was found guilty of, I think, 12 of those charges, and the charges essentially totaled 22 years and 8 months. So despite the fact that his his so-called crime didn't hurt anyone, nor was it intended in any way to hurt anyone, he's got a sentence about, 10 times longer than, rapists and murderers and things like that get. So I think myself and most people that view this sentence or view the case look at it as a tremendously vindictive and sort of deterrent sentence.
Yeah, like a message to future dissidents, essentially.
Sure.
Like, and it was quite a precedent as well, because I guess previous to his 23-year, essentially, sentence, was there anything else, like, was there any kind of precedent before that for ecological activists?
Definitely not for eco-activists. I mean, people were sentenced in the late 70s and early 80s to really long sentences, on the East Coast for actions related to, like, social justice and Black liberation, and a lot of those people, received 25 to life. But in those cases, often there was at least some element of, and so you have these people that are serving 25 to life, and, they're also political prisoners. But then you have people who are getting out of jail, people that served 14, 15 years for bombings. A few people got out at the end of Clinton's presidency. And one political prisoner from Maine, Ray-Luc Levasseur, who was a member of the United Freedom Front, got out after 20 years on parole, and he was accused of a whole host of bombings in which no one was injured.
Mm-hmm.
So what I gave you was essentially the really basic story, but I can kind of go into detail.
I love that, for sure.
Because it's sort of a complex case.
I think it's pretty important to hear some of the details just to understand deeper why.
Sure. I mean, it sounds really absurd at first. People, I think, doubt the legitimacy of what we're saying at times because, it sounds so absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, at the time in Eugene, Oregon, there was quite a burgeoning anarchist community that was very militant and engaged in a lot of different street protests and things like that, vandalism or whatever you want to call it. And so you had this situation in which the local authorities were really on edge, and the local anarchists had quite reasonably a really bad relationship with the local police department and things like that, just in sense of, I'm just trying to point out how tense things were at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have this, the backdrop to this is, in the northwest of the United States, you've had over 20 actions by individuals, by people in the Earth Liberation Front, the Animal Liberation Front, attacking and destroying property of different corporations in, in various industries like the fur industry or biotechnology or logging, mining, things like that. So you have 20 years of this activity going on by all sorts of people on all sorts of levels, and, they never, ever catch anyone. So you get this situation where you have this like local tension, but you know, a mayor who is extremely hostile to the idea of anarchists in his town, and a lot of that was because there was this big hype that the Black Bloc in Seattle WTO protests were somehow comprised of 100% Eugene anarchists. And that was sort of a myth that I think blew up, made it seem like, you know, what was going on in Eugene was more than what it really was. So what happened is, you know, there's this 8-week gathering called Eugene Active Existence, which was just like, you know, just sort of a gathering that was done by local anarchists that got a lot of people from out of town in there, did workshops, protests, all sorts of things. So at the end of it, it was supposed to be this big punk festival. And Jeff was living at a garage, like a puppet warehouse space that they did like self-defense workshops out of, and they did like puppet making and banner making and things like that. And that place was apparently under pretty significant surveillance. Now, of course, no one was really aware of this at the time, but as it came out in court, Jeff and his co-defendant Craig were basically followed from the moment they left the warehouse to driving all over Eugene to try to, you know, just, I guess, get to their action site without being tailed, which didn't work, actually. And then the cops essentially were following them in some sort of, like, six-car grid pattern. And then when Jeff and Craig went into the car lot to burn the cars, the cops claimed they lost sight of them, and then 10 minutes later they pulled them over in a neighboring town claiming there was a broken taillight or something to that effect. And it's at that point where they, you know, they conducted an illegal search of the car, and they found, you know, things that were related to the simple incendiary devices that were used by Jeff and his co-defendant. Mm-hmm. So they were arrested right there on the spot, big FBI presence in town. The action ended up, it was somewhat small, it's $40,000 in damages, and three SUVs were partially destroyed. And then Jeff and Craig were put in jail. A week later, they got slapped with, I think, five more charges related to an attempted arson that where a lot of the activists in Eugene live. And it was claimed that they tried to burn down oil tankers, like really large, you know, thousands of gallons of oil, you know, in the tank sort of trucks. And the interesting thing about this is the inclusion of those charges against Jeff and Craig made them look sort of like serial arsonists in the minds of like potential jurors, and it really made it hard to mount a successful defense. As it turns out, there's the fingerprints that were on that gas jug left at that site did not match Jeff's or Craig's, but they were nonetheless, Jeff was convicted of those charges. So it was a really ridiculous case. A lot of really bad stuff went on. Jeff's lawyer died of a heart attack right before trial. People went out and burnt the car lot pretty much to the ground, burning like 36 SUVs, and then released a statement saying the action was in solidarity with Jeff, which sort of, you know, just destroyed the jury pool, any chance of having a fair trial. And Jeff chose to have a bench trial, so they didn't. And the trial lasted a few weeks. And then the judge, with a straight face, said that he was sentencing Jeff to 22 years, 8 months, and had absolutely nothing to do with his politics, which was pretty laughable, mm-hmm. if it wasn't so upsetting.
Yeah, if there was clearly a political sentencing, I guess, considering
sure.
that, you know, people get less sentences for far worse crimes. What other kind of legal inconsistencies were there, or injustices were there in the case at all?
Well, you know, we hired pretty successful lawyers to defend Jeff, and all the pretrial motions were denied. There was a motion to sever Jeff's case from Craig's case so that there'd be no pressure by the cops to like try to make them testify against each other. There was a motion to sever the Romania Chevrolet action from the attempted arson, which was pinned on them.
Mm-hmm.
That was denied. They tried to quash the illegal search of the car, also denied, as well as the search of the warehouse. So all the like tools that normally defense lawyers would use to you know, sort of try to defend their client were kind of stripped. And then, you know, once Jeff's lawyer died, at that point, Craig had already took a plea bargain, which was, you know, a 5.5-year sentence, and that was, you know, discussed between Jeff and Craig, and decided that was a good move for Craig to do, and subsequently he never had to Part of the deal was that he wouldn't have to ever testify against Jeff in court, which was really good. Mm-hmm. Nor would he ever. I mean, he's a pretty cool person himself. But then we had to petition and fight for Critter. Craig's nickname's Critter, sorry. Mm-hmm. We had to petition for Critter's lawyer, Brian Barnes, to become Jeff's lawyer since he knew so much about the case. And that was a big fight. You know, they tried to say it was a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. So it was a really laborious procedure and sort of, you know, no one really knew at that point what he was going to get. We were thinking it was going to be like 5-6 years. Yeah. And if you look at arsons in Oregon State, that's typically what it is, if not a little less than that. It was a real nightmare of a trial, and a lot of inconsistencies. And those inconsistencies are raised in the appeal that was filed by Jeff's lawyer on, I think it was January 2002, which we are still waiting to go before the courts on. So We're essentially waiting for a date and hoping that some court decisions on the Supreme Court level in the U.S. will have some sort of an impact on Jeff's sentencing, and so we're going to be addressing the Court of Appeals on that as well.
Hmm. What was the community's reaction when his sentence was released?
Well, for the people that were in the room, total shock. I was one of those people, and we essentially walked to the cafe across the street and just kind of sat there in silence for about an hour. I think people were really upset and stunned. For me, it was a wake-up call. It was sort of made all the things that I kind of felt and knew about the state and the length that they'll go to protect industry, it made it all too real. Mm-hmm. I also realized that some of the prisoner support I was engaged in the year leading up to Jeff's trial really didn't address the realities of a 23-year sentence. Mm-hmm. So I think at that point, you know, some people were too stunned to continue working on it, and some people just dug in and decided that we were going to, you know, support him through basically the long term. So at that time, actually, a lot of outreach was done to political prisoners and people who support them about these long-term sentences and how to switch from a short-term jail support situation to a long-term, you know, political fight to essentially get our friend out well before his 23-year sentence is up.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a possibility?
I think so. I'm cautiously optimistic, based on the fact that, you know, I really took for granted that he was going to, you know, get a shorter sentence for his criminal trial. I don't have any faith in the legal system, but ultimately we use it because it's one of the many tools we have. And so before they completely remove the legal process out of jailing our comrades, I think we should at least use it mm-hmm. for what it's worth and mm-hmm. see what we can get out of it. But I essentially believe that we're going to shave some years off his sentence, but ultimately I don't know really how to answer that question.
Yeah. I was wondering if, just to like contextualize a bit of like how that warehouse was tapped or surveilled so much, like, do you want to talk a bit about who Jeff was before he did this action and what kind of stuff he engaged in the community?
Uh-huh. Well, Jeff was a pretty fairly small town. It's roughly 150,000 people, had a very vocal and somewhat small anarchist community and activist community. But Jeff was one of the first tree sitters in Oregon State. He sat in the Fall Creek Tree Village, which was a tree occupation in the Willamette National Forest outside Eugene, about 45 miles outside Eugene. In 1998, he sat there for 3 months. He basically started the tree sit with a few friends, and oddly enough, that patch of land, the timber sale has been shrunk to somewhere at around 29 acres, and the patch of land still stands. I think that the timber sale is either completely stalled or stymied by the resistance there.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a tree sitter, and he was a forest activist in town as well. He taught self-defense classes, mostly for women. He worked at, you know, Not Bombs chapter. He was, you know, I think he's part of what, you know, people call the anti-globalization movement. But he's a pretty vocal person, very much in support of, tactical ingenuity and not getting frozen in our tactics and mm-hmm. our mindset. And definitely one to be a very serious person that I think really was all about putting aside petty conflicts that we have and really focusing on our, really the main struggle at hand. And I think that voice has sort of been elevated since his incarceration, because I think, you know, he really sees how ridiculous some of the conflicts we get in on the outside. The activist community is sort of known for being at each other's throats when we have these really oppressive structures that we should be attacking instead of each other. So he's pretty vocal about that, for sure. And, you know, I think people take him seriously because he's a political prisoner. And he's been, you know, basically engaged in constant battle against the prison authorities since he's been in. So, you know, I mean, it's good that he's able to share that message of, like, not unity, meaning we're squashing every single thing, we come in, like, identical, but sort of putting some of the stuff maybe to the side and working, you know, with commonality.
Annie, do you want to talk a bit about the zine that was just published, Heart Check?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, Heart Check is the new zine that Jeff co-authored with fellow political prisoner Rob Saxton, also known as Rob Los Ricos. It's 45 pages. It's a full-color cover, really beautiful artwork on the cover and inside, and it's all original writings by Jeff and Rob Saxton. And it's available from our website, which is, I should have said before, www.freefreenow.org. It's also distributed through AK Press, Clamor Magazine, The Earth First Journal, and this one Canadian distributor that I have a really hard time saying. Are you familiar with that one?
I don't know. Which one is this?
Kerspleb de Dev. I have such a hard time saying that.
I've never heard of that before.
But it's based out of Montreal, and they're actually doing Canadian orders.
Right.
But you can find the information for that distro as well as other information on the website. Actually, there's a huge picture of the Heart Check cover right now on the website, and you can just click on that and find Heart Check, no problem. So yeah, and we're doing it as a fundraiser for Rob's release fund and Jeff's legal defense. And so, you know, people have been very generous, and the response has been really good, and we've actually been selling a lot of them lately, so it's really exciting.
Nice. What do you think have been the main shifts in Jeff's perception since being in jail for 5 years already? Like, what do you think has evolved the most?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah, what do you think has been the main, like, how do you think Jeff's political perspective has evolved over the last 5 years, like, exhibited in the zine so far? Like, what do you think have been the main changes in his way as a worldview?
I don't know, that's a tough one. That's definitely a better question for him to answer than me, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I just noticed, like I was saying before, there's the threat of just really, preparing for, like, or isolating the actual enemy and not fighting amongst ourselves. I think Jeff also, because his action had a lot to do with global climate change, he speaks a lot on that, and, just about the inability of governments to solve our problems, and that, speaking about autonomy and community autonomy and things like that.
Yeah.
It's really hard for me to simplify.
Yeah, definitely,
You know, the writings are available on the website, though. He has a whole page of writings in addition to the Heart Check zine, and so, he's quite prolific, as well as releasing monthly dispatches that we end up sending out to our listserv.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could talk about a National Day of Action, or a weekend of action going on this weekend, because it's pretty time-relevant.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, this weekend is the June 10th to June 12th Weekend of Resistance for Jeff Lures. With Jeff Lures, and it's essentially we did a day of action last year, and there were 27 events on this day, and we decided to do a weekend this year to just sort of make it easier for people if they want to do more than one event, as well as just having a range of days to do things. So thus far, there's events in I think 25 cities, and we're hoping for a few surprises. But the events range from everything from like film screenings to punk shows to outdoor festivals, community meals, things like that. Last year, like I said, there were a bunch of different events, and the FBI decided that they were going to release an eco-terror alert, and so they released this crazy alert and got everyone just freaked out, and the corporate media was, telling SUV dealerships that they were going to need to protect their SUVs, and, this was a call to action written by, Jeff's support crew. This wasn't an Earth Liberation Front, communique. And so we found it kind of laughable. And, in fact, I think their plan ultimately backfired really badly. And we ended up getting just an enormous amount of support and interest, really. I think the website actually... Now, this is a website that gets, maybe 100 hits a day on good days.
Really?
I believe that we got 46,000 visits, just to show the amount of media that because of this FBI alert. So we're sort of laughing about it and kind of wondering this year whether or not it's going to happen again. And, at this point, I'm more than welcome to watch the FBI make asses out of themselves and help promote our website through Fox News and their other entities. thus far, you know, it's Wednesday and I haven't heard anything yet, so maybe they won't be harassing, you know, activists trying to do good things. So.
Yeah.
But ultimately, although it is funny, it's also quite sad because, you know, a few people that did events last year suffered some pretty dire consequences. One crew was actually evicted because the FBI scared their Middle Eastern landlord. And another crew basically just didn't have their event because they weren't really prepared for the onslaught of media interest that, you know, oh, I hear that you're going to attack SUVs and that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's funny to laugh at the FBI and CSIS and all these other horrible people. You know, I know you have your, Canada has its fair share of disgusting agencies as well.
We do, yeah.
But, you know, it's pretty horrible what they do. So
mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens this year.
Interesting.
But people can check out the website at mm-hmm. freefreenow.org, and there's an events page, and it's really quite impressive. We've been able to pull off a number of international events. This year we have stuff in Brighton and London, England, Melbourne, Australia, Helsinki and Tampere, Finland, mm-hmm. Moscow, Russia, and Edinburgh, Scotland, and as well as just events all over the United States.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it should be really great.
Very impressive. A few more questions. We got about like 9 or 8 minutes left, I guess. I was wondering about one thing, like Jeff wrote, this is more like for your perspectives on like things as you see them in the States, like organizing and whatnot. Jeff wrote, and I like this, for our movement to become more than a counterculture, we have to stop mystifying direct action. We have to recognize direct action for what it is, a necessity. And I was wondering, like, in your work with Free and like just the circles you're in, like the organizing of the International Days of Action and distribution of a zine, where do you feel things are at right now with this shift as far as support for people who engage in action or political prisoners?
Well, I definitely feel we're in a very repressive climate, and a lot of people are under attack right now. I view sort of prisoner support as a very, you know, a lot of people don't see it this way, but prisoner support to me, or political prisoner support in particular, is very much creating the groundwork for, like, fertile ground for direct action. Because I feel like if people know that there's going to be communities that will support them and see them through to the end of their sentence, they're much more apt to take action. So for me, you know, ultimately, the prisoner support that I've been engaged in have been, you know, many times people I know getting caught or getting arrested, so I do support for them. But it's certainly, you know, evolved into this pro-direct action thing. And I think that we really need to realize that, like, unless people see a very strong support network for ecological or, you know, social justice prisoners, they're not going to be so quick to act. I mean, what kid is going to be willing to, you know, do an action, go out and, you know, destroy some piece of property if they think they're going to languish for, like, 3 years in jail or much worse? But, yeah, for sure, I feel like the climate in the States right now is really repressive. It's not just based on Bush and Gonzalez and them, but it's based on somewhat of a post-911 climate that has just kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're seeing the Shack 7 being prosecuted for what's called animal enterprise terrorism, and they're facing like many years in jail for essentially operating a website. You mm-hmm. also have in the West Coast, or excuse me, in the Midwest, Peter Young, a man that was on the run for 8 years. He apparently got snitched by his co-defendant. He is facing some absurd 70-year charge for releasing, he's been accused of releasing animals from a fur farm in Wisconsin. So it's really repressive, and I think that we assure people that there are these networks of support. And I also think that prisoner support and political prisoner support needs to not be the domain of experts. It needs to be something taken on all over the place and not just these centralized groups of people. Ideally, we'd have, you know, anarchist Black Cross networks and different groups in many different cities, as well as, you know, the Jericho movement, which is still around and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is, yeah, it's definitely not seen as a very important thing to support prisoners, but I like your reasoning for it, to fertile ground. I also thought to mention as well Trey Arrow, who's sitting in Canada, in Vancouver, who's facing 80 years in prison with no chance of parole for essentially being framed for burning 5 pieces of logging equipment.
Sure.
Which is pretty crazy, so.
Yeah, that's really insane. I mean,
that's a whole new precedent, essentially.
I'm really glad that Trey is able to, you know, has not been extradited yet, because the climate in Oregon and the Northwest around these things can be pretty intense. You have, like, groups like this property rights movement in the Northwest of the U.S. That engages in just tremendous smear campaigns. And plus, you know, he's dealing with a defendant that essentially snitched on him and is accusing him. And, you know, we solidly back Trey Arrow and his support team and, you know, have a lot of respect for them. They've done a really excellent job in keeping him healthy and keeping him in, you know, in Canada, you know, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Another question posed is, I wonder, like, do you know what other prisoners' responses are to Jeff and his sentencing? Like, in the prison he's in right now? Like, what's it like for him to be there?
I think he's fairly well-known. I think people find it really ridiculous that he's in, you know, for that kind of sentence. As far as I understand, he has a lot of friends in prison, makes friends pretty easily, doesn't get involved in the bullshit day-to-day stuff that happens there sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon jails are really racist and very segregated, and Jeff, you know, obviously has nothing to do with that. But yeah, I think people think it's absurd. I imagine somewhat of a celebrity because he appears in newspapers and TV and things like that, especially around this time of the year. But yeah, I think they have a lot of respect for him. You know, he got into a fight very early on in one of his jails, and he ended up doing 90 days in the hole for refusing to tell the guards who it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty classic, you know, prison behavior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, I think he rolls with the punches, and you know. Ultimately, in jail, Jeff's one of his biggest, you know, battles right now is just being able to get his mail properly and be able to send out mail properly. And so mm-hmm. on that end, it seems that he is about to, I think he just filed a notice of a claim to sue the Oregon Department of Corrections for basically censoring his artwork that he's been trying to send out. He's actually tried to send a piece of artwork to the people in Montreal who do the political prisoner calendar,
mm-hmm.
and it's never it got rejected. But oddly enough, instead of going through the correct, you know, procedure, the Oregon Department of Corrections decided they were just going to give it back to him. And they told him that it couldn't be sent out because it was a dangerous piece of art or dangerous, you know, against the regulations. But then they were willing to give it back to him so he could put it in a cell. So that doesn't really make much sense. And it's sort of the logic inherent in prison guards and the prison system.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll
mm-hmm.
be supporting Jeff in his lawsuit. And hopefully he'll be able to represent himself pro se, which if they allow him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, of course, expecting some retribution for that sort of activity.
Yeah. Well, we got about 2 more minutes left, and I wonder if you have any closing words, anything people in Guelph who are concerned about Jeff who want to help, or even further inspiration at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, the website has all the information on how to help Jeff. Obviously, this weekend is the big weekend of resistance, and you can check out all the different events. Unfortunately, there's only, I think, one event in Canada this year. It's in Montreal. But there's always opportunities for people to host benefits and events. We have new stickers, a new documentary called 22/8, the Jeffrey Lurie story. There's a solidarity statement on the the website that people can sign and give their sort of like, you know, affiliations and stuff. And that's been signed from people like Howard Zinn and Mumia Abu-Jamal and other former political prisoners. We're always in need of donations. And there's an online donation button on the page, as well as information on where to send money. People can become distributors of the Zine Heart Check. You can check out, you know, some samples and where to get it, various things like that. Mm-hmm. There's also Jeff's address and the support address on the website. But if people ever need to reach the support crew, the website is freefreenow.org, and our email is freefreenow@mutualaid.org.
Right on.
Thanks.
So thanks a lot, Dylan, for talking with us.
Really
enjoyed talking with you.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, much appreciated. And hopefully this weekend we'll go over great all around the world.
Thanks.
I hope so. And yeah, once again, thank you kindly
for
coming on the air. And have a good day.
You too.
Okay, bye.